Our brother Philip Wong came and preached to us last week. And this week I want to start a new series. We're going to go through the life of Abraham from the book of Genesis. And if you know about Abraham, that's great, but hopefully we will see some things in his life that will teach us more about who God is. So we just read from Genesis chapter 13, and it talks about land. And if you know your history, if you've studied history, even if you look at the condition of the world today, you'll see that land is something that's really important. Right? For those of you who are adults, or if you immigrated here to Canada, one of the first things you wanted to do was buy a house. You wanted to find a piece of land and move in. So throughout all of history, this notion of claiming land has been important. We recognize that land is a big deal. People have fought wars over land. You know, the whole period of colonialism where the European countries spread out through the entire world, colonizing lands, fighting wars with people. You have the U.S., our neighbors to the south, where I'm from. They fought the Revolutionary War against England, and then after that, they started expanding west, claiming land from the Native Americans. The Crusades were largely fought over land, trying to reclaim land from the Muslims. And now you look at Israel, Palestine. What are they fighting over for? They're fighting over land. So we see that land is a big deal. It's important. And in biblical times, it was the same thing. Land was more important, and I would even argue that it was more significant than it is now. Because we live in a very mobile society. So if you can show me by raising your hand, how many of you have moved at least once in your life? Yeah, so the majority of people here have moved at least once. But back in ancient times, back in biblical times, people didn't move. People settled in a place, and unless there was some sort of natural disaster like a famine or some sort of tragedy, people stayed where they lived. Families, generations would stay in one place. And so when we look at the story of Abraham, in Genesis chapter 12, when God comes to Abraham and he says, you need to leave your home, you need to leave this land, that's a big deal. And so for Abraham to hear that, he would be like, no one just leaves their land for no reason, especially if some unknown voice tells you, get up and go. But Abraham obeys. And he leaves his land, he leaves his home, he leaves his family. And God makes him a promise. God says, if you leave your land, not if, but he says, leave your land and I'm going to show you a new land. So as Abraham leaves, what he's thinking has got to be, okay, where is this new land? Where is this new place that God is going to bring me? So throughout Genesis chapter 12, he's moving from place to place. And at every place, he builds an altar. He builds an altar to the Lord, and he calls upon the name of the Lord. And I believe that that's his way of saying, you know, he's like, God, is this the place that you want me to settle? Is this the place that you're showing me? So he goes from place to place, and he does this. So he's thinking about land, thinking, is this where I'm going to settle? We get to chapter 13 now. Abraham had his nephew, Lot, that other guy that we heard about. Lot is tagging along. He's the nephew of Abraham. And Abraham has accumulated lots and lots of possessions. He's very, very wealthy. Lot kind of benefits from Abraham's wealth. Lot himself has now accumulated a lot of cattle and livestock. So you have the two of them. They have lots of animals between them. And in our passage, they're fighting over land. Or at least their servants, their herdsmen are fighting over land. They're saying there's not enough land for all of our animals. And so we're going to watch Abraham solve this conflict, this tension between him and Lot. And through his solution, we're going to see Abraham display what I call a radical generosity. And when I say radical, I mean extreme. So the first thing that we see about Abraham's radical generosity is that it's humble. So we talked about that. So radical generosity is humble. If you look in verse 8, Abraham is speaking to Lot and he says, "Let there be no strife," or "let there be no conflict between you and me, between your herdsmen and my herdsmen, for we are kinsmen." You know, it says kinsmen, but in the actual original language, it's closer to the meaning brother. So Abraham is calling Lot his brother. But if you know about their relationship, and as I just said earlier, Lot is not Abraham's brother. He's his nephew. I have a nephew. He's 11 years old. I would not call him my brother. In my experience in helping to take care of him, I have used authority that I have as his uncle, as an adult, over him many, many times. I would not ever say that he is my equal. But here, when Abraham calls Lot his kinsman, when he calls him his brother, Abraham is lowering himself and he's elevating Lot. And he's making them equal. Radical generosity is humble. Abraham humbles himself. And the reason that this is so important is because even now we understand this, because as parents, when your kids are living in your house, you can always play this card of, "You have to do what I say because you're living with me. You're living under my roof. You're living under my care." And so for Abraham, as the older person, as the person that has been taking care of Lot all of these years, Abraham has the right to the land. The land is technically his. God promised Abraham the land. And so Abraham can say, "Who are you, Lot? Why are you coming in here and trying to fight me for my land?" But Abraham doesn't do that. Instead, he calls him his brother, and he's like, "Let's settle this as brothers, as equals." So what does he do? Well, look to verse 9, the next verse. Radical generosity is costly, because Abraham, he goes to Lot, and he says, "Look, all of the land is before you. Choose. If you choose the left, I'll go to the right. If you choose the right, I'll go to the left." Now, I don't know if you've ever been in a situation where you've wanted to share something with a friend. You know, when I was younger, I would go trick-or-treating with friends, or we would get candy at school. And I don't know if you guys have seen it, but there's these Starburst packets, and they come with two pieces of Starburst in them, right? You don't know what color they are. It's random. So I would share with my friends, and we would open one up, and I'm like, "Okay, you can pick first." Even though I don't know what color is in there, I'm like, "Okay, you can pick first," because I want to be generous, right? So you open it up, and the two colors that you get are pink and yellow. And now we all know that the pink Starburst is way better than the yellow Starburst. Strawberry is like 100 times better than the lemon Starburst. But you know, I told my friend that, you know, he can pick first. So obviously my friend, he'll pick the pink one. And I love the pink one. But because my friend picks the pink one, I'm left with the yellow one. Like, I can't have the pink one as well. And this is the situation that we have with Abraham and Lot. Abraham says, "Lot, if you choose the left, I'm going to have to take the right." It's not like they can share. Obviously, they can't share. And so Abraham says, "Here's everything, pick, and I'll take the other." And obviously there's one that's better than the other. We'll see that in just a little bit. But it's Abraham's generosity is costly because we'll see that he doesn't get the better land. Which brings us to our final point of looking at this character Lot. So radical generosity is also to the undeserving. We've talked a little bit about Lot. He's the nephew of Abraham. He doesn't deserve the land. He's kind of just leeching off Abraham all of these years. That's why he has all these possessions. And we get to this point in verse 10 where Abraham told them, you can pick. Lot looks out and he sees the Jordan Valley. And he sees that it's well watered. Everywhere, like the garden of the Lord. So what does he do? He chooses it for himself. Yesterday, the leaders, the elders of the church, and I, and the pastoral staff, we went to a golf club over in Oakville. It was my first time at a golf course. It was beautiful. Like green grass everywhere. We must have taken like a dozen pictures outside because it was so beautiful. And I'm imagining that when Lot looks out at this valley, he sees green grass, he sees rivers. And then you get this other side that's kind of like, you know, browning and dry, maybe mountains. And he's like, yeah, I want the green place for my animals. Lot's a little punk. His uncle has been taking care of him for all of these years, and now he's given the choice to repay his uncle back and give him the better land, but Lot's like, no, I'm going to take the better land for myself. So Lot is this selfish guy who's looking out for his own interests. We describe Lot like this. This is the kind of relationship that Abraham and Lot have. So we're thinking, how, if you know anybody in your life that's kind of like a Lot, somebody that's kind of selfish, somebody that's really just looking out for themselves, you know it's really hard to be nice to them. And talk about being radically generous to someone like that, not in a million years. So how can Abraham possibly be so generous, to Lot? Well, you're in church, we're reading the Bible, you're probably thinking, God, you know, God is the answer. And you're right, God is the answer. But that's kind of vague, it's kind of abstract, so let's make it a little bit more concrete. The key to the answer lies in what happens in chapter 12, verses 10 to 20. We didn't read this, but if you're familiar with the story of Abraham, you know that Abraham he's not the best person. So what happens in Genesis chapter 12, Abraham gets to Egypt. And two things occur while he's in Egypt. One is that, I said in the beginning, when Abraham was moving from place to place, he would build an altar and he would call upon the name of the Lord. But when he got to Egypt, he didn't build an altar. He didn't call upon the name of the Lord in Egypt. So that's the first thing, which I think leads to the second thing that Abraham does. You know what Abraham does? He's going into Egypt with his beautiful wife, Sarah. They call Sarah over. He's like, Sarah, I have a favor to ask of you. Sarah's thinking, okay, you want me to make you lunch, make you dinner? Sure. No, Abraham's like, all right, Sarah, you're a beautiful woman. So hold on to that. You're beautiful. Remember that. Now I need you to do me a favor. Because you're so beautiful, when we enter this land of the Egyptians, they're going to want to take you for themselves, so they're going to want to kill me. So what I need you to do when we get into Egypt is not tell people you're my wife, but you need to tell people you're my sister. So that way, because you're so beautiful, because you're my sister, they're going to treat me really well. Now, husbands, please don't ever do that to your wives. Kids, when you get married, if you are a guy, don't do that to your wife. If you are a woman and you're married to a guy that tries to do that, it's problematic. Don't let him do that to you. Because Abraham, right here in this episode in Egypt, he is looking out for himself. He's saying, I don't want to die. So he's saying, Sarah, you need to sacrifice yourself so that I don't die. So what happens to Sarah is she ends up being taken into Pharaoh's house. And, you know, they're like, Abraham does get a lot of things, but he threw his wife under the bus to get that. And so all of us, we can undoubtedly say that what Abraham did is wrong. Okay? What Abraham does is wrong. And so what happens when you do something wrong in the book of Genesis? It's called sin, right? We know that doing something wrong is sin. So scholars have noted that there is this cycle of sin, judgment, and grace. So basically, when you sin, God judges you, but then he gives you grace. So a few examples from the book of Genesis, if you remember, Adam and Eve, they sin, they eat the fruit, and God judges them. And he says, you have to leave the garden. But before he makes them leave the garden, what does he do? He shows them grace, and he gives them clothes. He gives them proper clothing. Fast forward a chapter, you have Cain and Abel. Abel offers a nice sacrifice, Cain offers a mediocre sacrifice, and then gets mad at God because God didn't accept the sacrifice, gets angry at his brother. So Cain kills Abel. Sin. God judges Cain, and he says, Cain, you are now forever judged to wander the earth, like no place will be your own. And Cain is all like, ah, that punishment is too much for me. So God shows him grace. And Cain is worried that people are going to find him. They're going to kill him. So God says, no one's going to kill you because I'm going to put a mark on you that whoever kills you will be punished many times more. So we have this cycle of sin, judgment, and grace running through the book of Genesis. So when we get to this part where Abraham commits this sin, we expect there to be a judgment on him. We expect him to, you know, maybe get some disease. Maybe he loses everything that he gained. But that doesn't happen when he's in Egypt. In fact, the judgment is actually on Pharaoh. And so what Abraham experiences in Egypt is a radical generosity from God. So instead of experiencing the judgment for his sin, Abraham actually experiences a ton of grace. So when Abraham is now in chapter 13, looking at Lot, and he sees this selfish little guy, and he's thinking, how can someone be so self-centered, only caring about himself? What he sees is himself from a few years earlier when he was in Egypt. He sees that he was this selfish person, and God showed him a ridiculous amount of generosity. And so now when he looks at Lot, he can say, even though you're so selfish, I can show you a radical generosity. It doesn't actually end there. But in verse 14, God goes on to tell Abraham that actually all of the land is eventually going to be his. So Abraham does get a reward for his generosity, but that's not the reason that Abraham did it. The reason that Abraham was generous to Lot was because he himself experienced the generosity of God. And so what does that mean for us? You know, this story happened over 2,000 years ago. My question to you is, do you see yourself as an Abraham or a Lot? Do you see yourself as a selfish person, as someone who kind of just thinks about what you want? Or better yet, are you more concerned about yourself than with God? Earlier I mentioned that radical generosity, it has these three aspects. It's humble, it's costly, and it's to the undeserving. Abraham gave Lot some really good land. He was humble. It cost him something. Lot didn't deserve it. And all of us, I'm sure, at some point have received some sort of generous gift from someone. You know, my parents, before Ruby and I moved up here to Toronto, they gave us a new car because Ruby and I were driving used cars before that. We didn't deserve it. We didn't really do anything for them. It's not like I had worked for my parents and they were like, okay, here you go. But when we think about the gifts that we have received, there should be one in particular that stands above the rest. And that gift is the gift of Jesus Christ. When we look at that gift, we see all three of these things. We see the humility. In Philippians, Paul writes that Christ humbled himself, made himself nothing, that he was even obedient to the point of dying on the cross. And if you look throughout the Bible, you see that God is not a God that treats us like little bitty subjects where he's like, I'm the king, you are my subjects, you must do what I say. But we see God's humility where he makes himself a father to us. He makes himself our father and we are his children. He makes us his sons and daughters with his true son, Jesus Christ. You know, the Bible tells us that we are co-heirs with Jesus Christ, that we reign as Jesus Christ reigns. You want to talk about humility, that is humility right there. The gift wasn't cheap. It cost God everything. You know, there's the point when Jesus is on the cross and he cries out, my God, why have you forsaken me? See, at that point, God turned his face away from Jesus Christ. And that fellowship between them was broken. It cost him everything. And it's for the undeserving. You and I, we hadn't done anything. You and I weren't even born at that point. We weren't even alive when Jesus died. There was nothing that we did to deserve that gift of salvation. And you know, to me, that's beautiful because it's not about if I can do something. It's not about whether I perform, then I get the reward. No, you know, the gift is a gift. It's already for you. But I don't want you to miss the important point of this radical generosity is if we lose sight of that gift, if we lose sight of what God has done and of who God is, that he's this generous God, we're never going to be able to be generous to other people. Yeah, we might be able to do nice acts, but we won't be a generous person. You see, when Abraham left Egypt and he's now in this new place, in the earlier verses of chapter 13, one of the first things that it says Abraham did is he built an altar and he called upon the name of the Lord. What his experience in Egypt taught him was, I need to be in the presence of God. I've experienced this grace and this generosity from God, and I want to stay there. And that's what allows him to be radically generous to Lot. So in my life, I've experienced radical generosity from God, especially through friends and family. I already shared that example where my parents gave me a new car. But when I was younger, when I was in high school, there was an older guy in my church. I call him my older brother now because we're that close. But he used to take me out for meals. He used to spend time with me. We played basketball together. We played video games together. We talked about what it meant to live as a disciple of Jesus Christ. But whenever he took me out for meals, I would try to pay. You know, I would try to split the bill with him at the very least. But he would never let me. And he told me that what he wanted me to do was that when I got older, when I started working, to do the same thing for the younger kids in my church. You see, for him, he experienced radical generosity from the Lord. That's what enabled him to be generous to me. And because I experienced that generosity from him, I was able to do that for others. So when we experience this radical generosity from God, when we know that he has held nothing back, and he holds nothing back, he desires to give and to give and to give, we'll be able to do the same. I'm not saying that that means we need to go and sell everything that we have and give to the poor. You know, there's a Bible story about that. And God may call some of us to do that. But if we're really honest with ourselves, if we really look at the things that we have a lot more than what the majority of the world has. Many of you met my friend from Kenya, Matthew. He came to visit us back in January. He's able to study at school because he relies on the support of friends. And so I wanted to support him over this past summer. And so I was able to give him some money. And you know, it meant that I would have to give up some things. You know, I really, really like to go bowling. But bowling, you know, costs money. So instead of going, you know, as often as I do, you know, I cut back on that. Ruby's been gone, as many of you know, for 2 months. It's been a real temptation for me to go out and eat every meal. But it's not cheap to go out and eat. And so I go out, buy groceries, cook my own meals. They last me for a week. I get sick of it by Thursday. But you know, it saves the money. It even saves time. And I'm able to spend time meeting with more people. I'm able to spend time with planning for ministry. But once you experience God's radical generosity, when you really hold on to what God has given you and to me, you'll be able to be a radically generous person. That's my prayer for each and every one of us. Would you join me as we reflect on what we've heard? Father, we come before you knowing that you are a generous, generous God. I know some of us may be tempted to think, well, if he's so generous, why hasn't he given me that $1 million that I've been asking for? I mean, there is an answer for that. And it's not because you're not generous. It's because you know that giving us that $1 million is probably not going to be very helpful to the way that we live our lives. But God, I pray that we can really think about how you have shown your grace and your generosity to us. That it peaked with you giving your one and only Son. And God, I pray that we may become generous people.